Coming up on 740 here on the Mighty 690, it's time for our chat with folks from K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District. And joining us, we have David Strauss. How are you doing, ma'am?
Doing good. How are you?
Doing well. Good to have you in here. And I'm sure you're keeping busy this time of year. I have got a three-page list, of course, courtesy of K-State Research and Extension, and you've probably seen it, of all the different fairs that are in the region.
Yes, keeping very busy. Of course, the Cherryville Youth Fair, which isn't one of the fairs we help out with, but is a great local opportunity for the kids to have the chance to show. And one more time this summer was last week. And then next week, all our county fairs start up. So it's very busy for us, very busy for all the 4-H kids in the area.
Oh, yeah. So I'm sure, yeah. Now, you help out with the ones that are within the Wildcat District. Is that right?
Yes. Okay. So we're involved with Wilson, Montgomery, Labette, and Crawford County.
Okay. Well, yeah, we're gonna get started with those here pretty quick. So yeah, Labette County's not too far away, and it's just, yeah, it's all happening.
Yeah, they've had a few things start this week. Clothing judging for the Montgomery County 4-H Fair was yesterday. Foods judging for the Labette County Fair was on Monday, and I believe part of their clothing judging is today. So we're slowly starting to start all those fair activities.
Hey, well, that's very exciting. Looking forward to that. It's that time of year, and we can't complain with that, but it's also hot.
Yes.
we have another heat advisory today for most of the 4-state area and, of course, southeast Kansas. And with that, it's a bit of a challenge to keep some of these animals cool. That would include, you know, small animals as far as, you know, ones you might find around the farm or the ranch, and also our pets. So I understand that's what you want to talk a little bit about today.
Yeah, I know a couple weeks ago when we were on, Wendy talked about keeping those larger livestock cool. So today, with the hot days we've had recently, I thought I would talk about how to keep those smaller animals and maybe your pets cool on these hot days we have. So of course, for us and all animals, the first thing is to make sure that they're drinking plenty of water, so to provide them access to fresh, clean water, and a lot of it. So chickens, for example, sometimes they may be free range in your yard during the day. So when it's hot like this, one way to encourage them to drink more water is to place a couple different waterers around the yard in cooler areas under shade trees, where hopefully the water can stay cool, where those chickens will hopefully be hanging out. And that way they are more likely to drink the water because they don't want to travel as far to get it. And then related to water, along with drinking it, getting in the water is also one way you can help animals cool off. So of course, for dogs, if you have dogs that like water, getting one of those plastic kiddie pools and putting it in your yard and giving the dogs the option to get in that and cool down is one option. For chickens, of course, they don't want their whole body getting wet, but you can do very shallow pans of water that they can walk in and put their feet in, and that will help cool them off. Or if you do have trees around and you're watering those trees or just under the trees so it's in the shade, you can wet down the ground and they'll kind of scratch around in that, and that will help cool them down. Now, of course, the downside to chickens kind of walking and standing in a shallow water pan to cool off is that they're probably also going to make a mess in that pan. So you're going to want to dump it regularly, at least once, probably preferably twice a day, to empty out any manure that's in it, because they're probably likely to drink that water while they're standing there, and that will help decrease the chance of them getting sick from drinking water that's been contaminated with manure. The other thing is when it gets really hot, animals don't want to eat as much. I know I find when I've been outside working, even in the evenings, it's still pretty warm. I don't get as hungry for dinner. And animals are kind of the same way. So to help keep their food consumption up, feeding them early in the morning or later in the evening when it's usually a little cooler outside will help them continuing consume more food, especially with chickens. You may have seen a decrease in your egg production during the heat, and that can be related to the hens aren't eating as much. So also if you give any type of scratch grains, any types of treats to your chickens, cutting those out or reducing them will help encourage them to eat that layer mash that is a little bit higher in protein and other nutrients. But to keep them cool, you can do other options like some frozen watermelon, freezing some fruits or some vegetables in ice cubes and putting those in their water or giving them to them as a cooler treat to help them cool off. And then with chickens and rabbits, another option to help keep them cool is freezing water bottles or soda bottles and then putting those frozen bottles for rabbits, putting them in their hutch, or for chickens, putting them in their close to their coop or someplace where they lay so they can get up against that frozen bottle to
help
them cool down that way.
Yeah, you see the water bottle trick employed.
Yep, it's very common at fairs to help keep those animals cooler.
Now, what about in perhaps a little bit more, you know, home meat rabbit production, something like that? Do people use fans? I mean, because obviously they're usually sitting around in the hutches a lot of the day.
Right. So usually they use a combination of those frozen water bottles in hutches. Fans are very common. Another option that I know some people have done with rabbits is to get old squares of scrap carpeting or old carpet sample squares and soaking those in cool water and giving those to the rabbits to give them something a little cooler to lay on. And then making sure those hutches and also your chicken coops get good ventilation so they can have that airflow to help them try and stay cool.
Gotcha. No, very good. I know it's one of those things that is a bit of a challenge, and I think I've even heard of, some fairs, you know, they've really struggled when it's super hot to have some of those rabbits and chickens and even had to cancel or maybe people take them home after the judging, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yep, we've had that happen before where the kids bring them in and show them, but then take them home because it's been so hot, and rabbits especially 4-H kids rabbits, they're kept inside,
they're
pets, so they're in a cooler environment. So going to the fairgrounds can be a tough adjustment for them.
Oh, yeah, especially, they're pretty much, they have limited cooling options,
yes.
Panting, and the ears radiating heat about it, mm-hmm. So chickens a little bit more equipped to handle some of that. But
yeah.
So anything else you'd like to share as far as the topic of kind of keeping some of these smaller pets and animals cool?
Yeah. So one thing I also wanted to share about chickens is, of course, they don't sweat. So if you see hens starting to pant and hold their wings away from them, that's a sign of heat stress. And that means they're extremely hot. So to help cool them off in those situations, you want to get their entire body wet with cool water, except for their head, of course, to try and help them cool down. And then also just a reminder for folks that may be in town and take their dogs for walks normally, to check the asphalt if you're walking on the road, or even the concrete, to make sure it's not too hot for your dog's paws. And by doing that, you can put your hand to the concrete, and if you're able to hold it there for 30 seconds without you feel like you're kind of burning your hand, then it should be safe and not too hot to walk your dog on.
Sure. And of course, with humid Southeast Kansas, it's 79% humidity right now.
Yes.
Evaporative coolers probably aren't really going to do much good, I'm thinking.
Yeah, they don't do as much good as, say, you know, the desert in Arizona or Nevada where it's a dry heat, so helping put some moisture in the air helps them out.
Sure. Yep. So I've seen sometimes you can kind of get away with that in Hutchinson at the state fair, but it's even then it's sometimes kind of a, it's a nice thought, but
yeah, it doesn't help out quite as much when we have the high humidity.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, David, if people do have questions for, you know, any diversified ag questions or any smaller livestock production questions, how can you be reached?
Yeah, I can be reached by calling 620-331-2690.
And any other events that are coming up besides the fairs? I know those are pretty much keeping you all pretty busy.
Yes. So today, James is at the Southeast Research Center in Parsons. They're having a soybean and corn field day, a shorter field day. So it will just be in the morning. So folks, they have time to get there if they head that direction now. And then coming up on August 3rd is the beef and forage field day. And I think Wendy has some more information on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I know we'll talk here in a little bit. We have a little bit of time if you want to plug that now.
Yeah. August 3rd, we're going to be getting together at the Southeast Research and Extension Center there in Parsons, right off Highway 400. And we've got a really great lineup of speakers talking about herd dispersal and the tax impacts of that, and then as well as getting back into the cattle business. In the morning, we've got several presentations, and then in the afternoon, we're actually going to get out and take a look at some of the demonstration plots and the research that's been going on there at Parsons.
Hey, that's excellent. That's really good stuff. So we have Wendy Powell coming up here in just a couple of minutes. What's your topic for today, Wendy?
We're going to talk about parasites on swine. So external parasites, flies, mange, all kinds of creepy crawlies.
That's great. That's good stuff. So look forward to that. Well, so we have that coming up. 79 degrees right now in Coffeyville as we head towards 8 o'clock. Back here on the Mighty 690 at 810, joined by the folks from K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District. We have David Strontz with us and Wendy Powell here to talk a little livestock production, of course. How are you doing, Wendy?
I'm great. How are you?
Pretty good. And I'm sure, like a David, you're kind of gearing up with all these fairs that are going through the area. Like, we have this big old list of fairs.
Yes. Yeah, it's a fun time.
Oh, yeah. Busy, busy time. So we, of course, will be seeing plenty of swine at the fair. Always fun to run through the swine barn and see what's what. But just like this time of year here, got problems with parasites and other problems with lots of livestock, and swine are no exception.
That's right. Yeah. So we all, whenever we think of hogs, we also bring to mind their aroma.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's always some flies around too. The other parasites that bother hogs are lice, mange, there's a couple of different fly species that can be a real problem. But the main one there is house flies. And house flies, as we know, they don't really bite humans or animals for a blood meal. They're just a nuisance, and they just drag germs from every place they land. So that gets to be a premise problem. And so lots of problems with that. Stable flies are the other one. They're about the same size as a house fly, but they're a darker gray color, and they do take blood meals, and their bites are very painful. So that's something that we've got to keep an eye on. Cleanliness is really the best answer for taking care of flies. Just making sure that organic matter is cleaned up and managed properly, because those stable flies, they breed in that decaying organic material. So, which also adds to the wonderful aroma, but that getting that cleared away and taken care of will help with that fly pest population.
Gotcha. So you mentioned the different flies and that sort of thing. And then we also, I guess, have lice, and we think about think about head lice or something like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, it translates over into pigs.
Yeah, absolutely. So the hog lice is actually the largest louse that infects domestic animals. It's a quarter inch long.
Mm.
So you can usually see those with your naked eye, but they're kind of a slate blue color. So especially with Hampshire hogs, it just blends right in with their skin tone. So they can be camouflaged, but they are large enough to see. We usually will first find lice inside their ear in clumps or in the skin folds of their neck. So those are the first two places that you're going to see lice. But then, of course, they can go throughout the body of the hog. So whenever a louse, singular lice, is called louse.
It just makes sense.
Yes. The bites cause the skin to thicken and crack, which causes it to be tender, just as you can imagine. So those pigs are just kind of, they're sore and they don't like to be touched. Lice will affect pigs of any age or condition, but of course, stress, just like with humans, stress will increase the vulnerability of those hogs to lice.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and just like with head lice, like you mentioned, it's spread through contact. So anytime you have a new animal, you certainly want to isolate that animal and keep it quarantined, treat it for external parasites, keep an eye on it for other diseases before introducing that animal to the rest of the herd.
So, and then also with mange, we typically associate that with an animal that has a lot more fur and that sort of thing, but you say you can find mange on hogs as well.
Yes, there's actually two different types of mange that will affect hogs. I'm not going to go into those details, but it's caused by a tiny mite, kind of like, I mean, it's microscopic. You can see them on a pig with a hand lens. And what this critter does, it burrows through the skin and it makes these little tunnels right under the skin that can be anywhere from a tenth of an inch long to 1 inch long. Mm. And so you're going to see these hogs like scratching and rubbing. And then those areas of their body that are affected are going to become inflamed, and it can eventually spread over the entire body. You first see it around the eyes and ears, along the top of the neck and the top line, over the backbone of the hog. And that'll just become scaly and inflamed and scabby and just generally gross, and eventually raw and cracked. And so that leaves the animal open to secondary infections as well. So you mentioned the hair. With mites, the hair becomes really stiff and it stands upright. So think of a cat that's fighting for its life or whatever. It's a frightened cat. That hair just stands straight up and it's straight out. And it gives the hog an unkempt look. So okay. Usually that hair is laying down and it's pretty smooth. But whenever it's infected with mange, then that hair just kind of like goes everywhere like electrified.
Interesting.
Yeah. So the mites that cause mange can complete a generation in just 2 weeks.
Wow.
Excuse me.
You're good.
So that's really, really fast. They complete all of their life cycles on the hog. So it's just like this perfect little environment for these little critters. So whenever you start seeing these, if you see the symptoms, that means you've had the problem for 3 to 6 weeks already. So it's highly contagious. It can sweep through a herd of hogs so quickly. And so you generally, if you see one animal that's affected, then you just have to treat the whole herd.
And you mentioned some of this already, but any other signs that we want to look for when we're trying to identify some of these external parasites?
You certainly want to make sure you're looking at the skin, of course, but these critters are going to be restless. They're going to seem like they don't feel well. They've got something going on. They're itchy and they're just kind of wandering around looking for a place to find some relief. So they're going to eat less and they're going to lose weight. And that's really where we get hit economically, is because those animals aren't reaching their production goals.
Sure, sure. Now, as far as the potential health risks go, what are some of these that, you know, can cause problems if left untreated with these external parasites?
Yeah, so like I'd mentioned, the skin becomes irritated and it can crack and open up, and so secondary infections can move in of various sorts, just like with humans. You know, you contract all sorts of things. But some of the hog diseases that we worry about is hog pox. There's like similar to chicken pox, they get these spots on their belly and it affects them. Hog cholera, leptospirosis, there's others too. So that's what these insects will move around from animal to animal, is these other diseases that we worry about. So we just have to make for sure that whenever we're bringing in new animals to our herd, we are making for sure to quarantine, treat, inspect those new critters, those new animals, before we introduce them to our herd.
Now, what are some of those key factors that cause some of the spread of the infestation there, of the external parasites?
Yeah, close contact, hog-to-hog contact. Even if you've got a fence between hogs, so like at the fair, this is what we really worry about. That's why we do vet checks whenever animals come into the fairs, to make for sure that we're not exposing everyone's hog to one person's possibly infected hog. So that close contact is the biggest thing. And then also they can be carried in, like these little mites. If you have pigs at one location and you've been cleaning or whatever it is, you can actually just move those mites to a secondary location and infect those hogs too. So really maintain that biosecurity and make for sure that you are paying attention to all of those little details, because those hogs can become infected so fast.
Oh, sure. Now, as far as trying to control and prevent these parasites, what are some of these practices that we can adopt to make sure that we minimize this?
Yeah, definitely quarantine new animals. Whenever you take animals to the fair, since that's coming up so quickly, make sure whenever you take your fair animals back home that they are also quarantined, just in case they did pick up something at the fair. Don't throw those in with the rest of your animals. And that goes for all species. So quarantine your show stock when you bring it home. Clean out your trailer. Practice all those biosecurity practices. If you aren't sure what biosecurity practices you need to follow, just give me a holler. I'm happy to discuss that. And like what I had mentioned with the fly situation earlier, keep that organic matter cleared up. Not only will that help with the aroma and your neighbors will appreciate you more, but also it will help with that fly population.
Now, what about treatment for something like mange? Obviously, you want to get with your vet, but what are they usually going to recommend for something like that?
Yeah, there's several options for all of these. There's Premise sprays that you can use for flies to control the fly populations, where you would just spray the whole facility. And then there's also chemicals that you can give to, not really chemicals in the sense that it's herbicide, but they're pesticides that you can give to the hogs to help control these pests too. So I've got some great information. Most of the words are difficult to pronounce, so I'm not going to go through that right now. But if anybody wants that information, I am happy to share it. Just give me a call, and we can discuss that.
All right. And of course, I know those treatments aren't free by any means, but having and keeping these parasites around, that can cause an economic impact, I'm sure.
Sure, absolutely. So, like I had mentioned earlier, just like with whenever we feel itchy and gross, we might not want to be eating or touching food. So those hogs are the same way. They're looking for comfort. And so they're going to decrease their intake of feed, and they're going to drop in production. And or if they're pregnant, then those females might have other stress too. So definitely want to keep an eye on that. That's the biggest hit to the pocketbook. But then also dealing with an outbreak can be incredibly expensive. So prevention truly is the best key factor here.
Absolutely. It's a little bit goes a long way.
Yes.
Well, anything else you'd like to share with us, Wendy? I know you also have some events and that sort of thing coming up, right?
Yeah. So August 3rd is the Beef and Forage Field Day. It's at Parsons, and we've got some really great speakers lined up talking about the tax impacts of herd dispersal, and then what it would take to get back into the cattle business. We're going to talk about some cull cow demonstrations and factors with cull cows. We've got some livestock pesticide people coming down to talk about internal and external parasites in cattle. And then also that afternoon, we're going to look around the demo sites at the research center. So we'll be able to see the interseeded grasses as well as the broom sedge projects.
Hey, that's going to be a great one. And of course, Wendy, if people have some livestock production questions for you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Sure. Give me a holler at the Labette County Extension Office. That phone number is 620-784-5337.
Excellent. And David, if folks have questions for you about smaller animals, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
They can reach me by calling the Independence office. That number is 620-331-2690.
All righty. Well, David, Wendy, great to have you on here on the program. Enjoy the upcoming fairs and that sort of thing. I know it's going to be a busy time. Look forward to chatting again here real soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All righty. We'll get started with an early word edition of Open Line that's coming up here in just a couple of minutes here on the Mighty 690 KGGF.